too good to be forgotten. The 10 years from 75 to 78 were the last sustained period in which the hegemony of the major big city football clubs in England was challenged and at times surpassed. It is the subject of a book about the golden era of football in the UK. It's The Three Wise Men from Football's Golden Era. It's written by Ben Dobson. Delighted to say that Ben joins us live on the line now. Ben, good morning to you.
Good morning, Giles. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Now then, this took me a big smile on my face, because if you're of a certain age, if you were a small boy in the 70s and you grew up watching, you know, sort of England's late sort of 70s team, you know, Brooking, Keegan, etc., Clements, not getting to a major finals, but my goodness, some players we had and some managers we had. And we've got McMenemy, Robson and Cluffy in this one. I mean, absolutely, when managers were, people talk about managers being larger than life now, but my goodness, back in the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Where this really came from is I'm a terrible old nostalgist, Giles, particularly when it comes to football. And I grew up as a Southampton season ticket holder in the 70s and 80s in years that pretty much bookended Laurie McMenemy's time at the club. And writing my first book actually took me back to this era. And it became clear to me, really, that was a time that was particularly precious, because it was the sort of football that an era and a type of management and leadership that can never come again in our game these days. That's not necessarily to say that's wrong. It's just a fact. You know, the game has changed. Sport moves in conjunction with society. But I have a special feeling, I know from talking to other people that they have a similar feeling, that particular era shouldn't be forgotten. It was particularly special. And it was quite remarkable what three managers did with three small provincial clubs to take them onto the global stage in a way that can never be done again.
And the three small clubs we're talking about is obviously Southampton, Nottingham Forest with Cluffy, and Ipswich Town with Robson.
Ipswich Town with Robson. People will forget, but in 1981, under Bobby, Ipswich Town were voted the European Team of the Year, ahead of Liverpool, ahead of Barcelona. This is Ipswich Town from sleepy Suffolk.
Yeah.
But one of the other things that the book is about, it's about legacy. It's about the fact that these guys left us the time of our lives. Plenty of books have been written on the fact that Forest won two European Cups and that sort of thing. This is more about the connection to the communities and what this success in this 10-year period meant for the communities themselves as they were put on the map like never before. And given their backgrounds in the northeast of England in the 30s, this was something that all three managers valued very highly and made a point of making the most of that and making a connection between players, managers and communities. And funnily enough, all three of the managers and virtually all of the players I interviewed for the books, wherever they went, where in terms of other clubs, wherever they were brought up, they all still live in these places now, which is an indication of the connection to the community, which lasts to this day, really.
But again, you see, this is the thing, because we're talking about the time before the Premier League starts and the big money comes in and the trust funds and the money from overseas and the huge squads. So therefore, you don't have that deconstructed disconnect that you do between a modern footballer, perhaps, who's worried about the side of it, you know, who's on this ridiculous amount of wages, with the person in the stands. And also, yeah, you have the very nature now of football. I was talking about something about Miami the other day, Miami Football Club, which is a franchise, but it is so blatantly obvious that they're only in it for the corporate and the big names and the merch, and not for the, yeah, not back to basics, which this absolutely is.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair to say these days that even in these days of what I consider to be a fairly frightening construct of the Premier League, that there is a lot of good work done in football, in the community schemes, the players contribute to those, but that's exactly what they are. They're schemes. Whereas in the old days, it was organic, that the players, you know, there were stories that I was told when I was interviewing players for the book of Southampton coming back from their 1976 FA Cup quarterfinal win from Bradford. And they sat on the train with the fans, sharing a few cans. And, you know, I'm not stupid enough to think that Kevin De Bruyne and Erling Haaland are going to be able to do that these days. But something precious has been lost there. And it's worth going back to and revisiting, I think.
And so just talk us through what they want and their styles, because they're from, you know, the managers are from the same part of the world, but wildly different management styles. Because Pete, I mean, obviously Robson, national treasure now. I mean, he is St. Bobby of Robson, and quite rightly too, but people will only remember him perhaps or first think Italia 90. And then obviously, because we're in Spain, the Barcelona, where he was, you know, and he was a trailblazer. Let's, you know, he was a trailblazer there.
Yeah. Interesting, because one of the things that pointed me in this direction was that there was a book by Leo Moynihan called The Three Kings, which I read a couple of years ago, which was all about Matt Busby, Bill Shankly, Jock Stein. The fact that they all came from within 30 miles of each other within Glasgow. That got me thinking about these guys. These three guys were all born within 3 years of each other, within 40 miles of each other. And the background, both the timing of it, pre-war austerity, the family values that they were brought up with, the fact that in the northeast of England, football is in the blood, which is the first chapter of this book, it formed them. And they never forgot those roots. And it basically dictated their values and their management styles going forward. There's a part in the book called Three of a Kind, which is it basically analyzes exactly what you just touched upon there. Where were the similarities? And there were loads of similarities. And if you actually look at their records at these three clubs, they are astoundingly similar. And they all achieved things for the first time for these clubs using similar styles of management. But they were indeed, yeah, they weren't the same. They had distinct personalities. Cluffy would be more like I think Duncan Hamilton, his biographer, talked about his ability to sting people indiscriminately. And Cluffy's style was very much to do the completely unexpected at every turn, to be very limited with his praise. And if you ask players like Martin O'Neill, they back that up. But it was all for a reason. Whereas Robson was a bit more avuncular, as probably befitted the fact that more of Robson's team were brought in as young kids from his youth team. And he was more of a arm round the shoulder guy. But all of them had very similar ways of building teams, creating an unbelievable spirit of togetherness, which basically allowed them to achieve more than the sum of their parts. And finally, you know, people like Pep Guardiola today, who worked under Robson, would say a lot of his management style comes from Bobby.
And McManaman, of course, a big guy, wasn't he? He was a big presence in all ways. I mean, you couldn't miss him on the touchline, which, you know, whereas, you know, Cluffy and Robson perhaps a bit more diminutive in size. But, you know, he was the original. Him and Joe Atkinson, you think, were the original big men, weren't they? Ron Atkinson or Joe Murphy were the big men on the touchline.
Yeah, I mean, some people would ask, other than complete bias from being a Southampton fan of that era, as to why Laurie McManaman is included in this story. But actually, he achieved incredible things with Southampton. And people would ask the question, you know, why on earth was Laurie McManaman on the World Cup 74 panel with Cluffy on the BBC a year into his time at Southampton, when all he'd achieved was a relegation? And it was, I asked Mick Shannon about this, and Mick's not a guy to mince his words. And I also had to edit them because quite a few of them were unprintable. But he said it was the profile of the guy. He had a presence about him, both physical and also an ability to mix very sharp wit and humour with an ability to kind of scare people and put people down. If you have a group of people managed over the years by Laurie, of the likes of Mick, Peter Osgood, Frank Worthington, Charlie George, Mark Dennis, Steve Williams, you have to have a strong character to you.
Every barmaid and every bar owner in the greater South Coast area has got to be pretty worried about that one.
Yeah. But this is what all three built the success on, was respect. They gave and they received respect, whether it be from big stars that people would wonder. Peter Rodrigues, the Saints captain who won the FA Cup in 1976, he had a pub in Southampton called the King Rufus after he finished playing, and he had a big picture of the 76 team behind the bar. And he told me, he said, look, basically, I used to look at that picture and think, how the hell did he manage that lot? And it was this ability to manage big egos and get the best out of them.
The other thing is the fact that we're talking about, let's go back to where these towns are. I mean, Southampton hadn't done much. This is before Letizia and everything, and you know, if you like, becomes more of a fixture in the Premier League or at the upper echelons. Ipswich, again, you know, two teams, the Tractor Boys in Ipswich, and a Mariner aside, and Mick Mills at Ipswich as well, I think. Thank you. That's going back to my football cards in the 770. Yeah, yeah.
Good knowledge.
Exactly. And also Nottingham Forest at that point, not well known either. And it makes, though, it puts a, you support those teams where you come from. Whereas now, obviously, we know that certain teams, for example, Manchester has become such a, both City and United are so big now that all the other teams like an Oldham or a Bolton, if you're in the Manchester catchment area, you may not be supporting those teams. The same could be said about London teams as well. They're going to go for a Champions League team because of the way that the football is organised. People want instant success rather than, and they're watching it on screens rather than sitting on a terrace watching it, in the real time, as it were.
Well, I actually heard something the other day that said that a lot of research says that young kids don't particularly follow a team anymore. They follow their favourite player, whoever he might happen to play for. But it's interesting. I mean, Russell Osmond said to me, Russell kindly contributed one of the forewords to the book, and Russell said in his time there, he was able to see when he arrived, it was a very sleepy, Ipswich was a very sleepy place. There wasn't a lot going on. As the success grew and they became a globally recognised team, you could feel the change in the city, in the town rather, in that case. And when the decline started post-Bobby, you could actually see that decline in the town as well. So the two are inextricably linked. And you know, Duncan Hamilton referred to Forest on Clough's arrival as being a rusting tugboat of a club, which he turned into the most successful team in Europe, which is ridiculous. And yeah, this is why when some people might flag up my book in Leicester and say, well, hang on a minute, what about our miracle in 2016? The point I'm trying to make here was that this was a period of sustained success which broke the football mold. Mm. And when Leicester won the title, unbelievable achievement. But within a year, Harry Maguire, Drinkwater, except Riyad Mahrez, they're all gone. You can't sustain it anymore because those players will leave. Whereas in those days, players like Steve Williams, who were coveted by a lot of big clubs, said, no, I actually believe I can win things here, and it'll be a bigger achievement if I win things for a sleepy club like Southampton.
But again, that's the way that the game has changed. Managers coming in, you say about, you know, agents coming in, you talk about the whole thing about people following players, because players now, you only have to look at Mbappe and the shenanigans that have been following him. Spanish media has been full of Mbappe for the past 3 years coming to Real Madrid. Now he is. But imagine what that does to your teammates. If you're not building something and you haven't got a manager who says, and the managers are the same, they very few, because everybody wants instant results. You know, you just look at Chelsea. They're going through a manager every you know, couple of days. But you see what I'm saying here? That nobody built, very few teams build for the long term in terms of, we'll put the kids on it in 2 years' time, because it has to be that immediate hit, that immediate financial return.
No, Absolutely. And the there's a chapter in the book called We'll Support You Evermore, which refers to the support that these guys got. They couldn't do it on their own. And in particular at Southampton and Ipswich, what people will forget is that for the first two or three years at both clubs, both Robson and McMenemy were under threat of the sack. Both got booed as they were walking down the touchline. And they had to turn the tide. They themselves recognised that whether it be the fairly eccentric Cobbold, Patrick and John Cobbold on the board at Ipswich, or whether it be what McMenemy used to call his old world directors, they supported them through thick and thin. And that's where the success came from. It took 5 years for Laurie McMenemy to get the club back out of the second division. He wouldn't be allowed to do that these days. 2 years later, he was signing the European Footballer of the Year in Kevin Keegan for Southampton. Now, you asked me if Wolverhampton Wanderers were going to sign Kylian Mbappe next year. It's not going to happen again. And this was the power of their personality, that they could bring people to clubs like that through the power of their personality. But they were definitely, and they all acknowledge it, that they had the support of their boards, they had the support of long-term devoted wives, and they had the support of very good scouting and backup teams, which is a management skill in itself, actually pulling these things together.
And there's still a tremendous... I mean, because I don't know, we always going about things were better then, but there's still a tremendous fondness, because you only have to look when Forest came back into the Premier League, how everybody said this was great because this is the place that they deserve to be. Yeah. And I know that Clough is no longer with us, etc. And so he's become as well this, you know, St. Brian of Clough, when he could be, shall we say, an interesting personality to deal with.
Yes,
but but when you write a book like this, how important is it to get a primary sources, and B, not set it in that sort of that warm fuzzy glow of 40 years ago, film is 50 years ago now.
Yeah, good question, because I felt, as I said before, it would be hard to argue, except possibly by Cloughy himself, that not enough words have been written about Brian Clough. And so another book on Cloughy. But it was the interrelationships, and I felt that I did need to go out and talk to the players of the era. And it was fascinating. That's why the book, I feel, has a fresh perspective, because it has a lot of input from these players on the way that these guys manage, but also why they all still live in the area. Mm. Yeah, I think the other thing I was very keen to do was I didn't just talk to players, I talked to fans.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of very helpful input from fans there as to what it meant to them. My friend Tim Smith from Ipswich has been a tractor boy since 1972. It could have been me speaking when I spoke to him. Tim is now based in London. All his work's in London. He still thinks Ipswich is home. He goes back there every other week. But if you take one of the contributors to the book, John Walk, John was a Scottish international, came from Scotland.
Fearsome player. One of the finest moustaches in football.
Absolutely. And I can tell you, I think I'm right in saying from meeting him that he's still got one. But John said to me, he said, even now, I went to Liverpool, I came from Scotland, Ipswich is my home and everybody knows it. And the thing that really struck me is that when I went to interview four guys from Ipswich, Russell Osman, Brian Hamilton, Johnny Walk, and Alan Hunter, I spoke to the guy that was pulling this together and I said, where do I need to go to talk to these guys? And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, do I need to go to London, Scotland? He said, no. He said, they all live within 15 minutes of each other in Ipswich. And that was the esprit de corps that these guys built. And with all due respect, and going back to this point about, I know things change, but I don't see Bruno Fernandes setting up home in Salford when he's finished.
opening a tapas bar in Salford. The book is called Too Good to Be Forgotten, Three Wise Men from Football's Golden Era. It's by Ben Dobson, who we're talking today. Ben, if people want to find you online, is there a website? Where can people track you down in the nicest possible way?
Yeah, the best place to get me, not a website at the moment. I would direct people to the Pitch Publishing website, which is my publisher's website. But you can also catch me on social media on at BenDobson67. And I will be, as you can imagine, I will be battering my social media, self-promoting myself for the next few weeks.
Well, it's a fabulous time to be battering on about. And I'm just, the only thing we can be glad that's not making a return from those days is obviously the managerial sheepskin coat on the side, I think. the book is called Too Good to Be Forgotten, Three Wise Men from Football's Golden Era. You can order it as well via our own virtual bookstore. It is by Ben Dobson. Ben, thank you so much for your time today.
Giles, loved it. Thank you very much.